My name is Ed Goldberg. Welcome to Author Author, an occasional series of conversations with authors touring through Portland or whom I have reached by phone. My name is Ed Goldberg, and I have the pleasure of speaking with Chelsea Kane. Chelsea, it's good to see you again.
Nice to see you, Ed.
Yeah, we've known each other for a while now.
I 30 guess. Years, I think.
Oh, no.
Seems like it.
Yeah, well, it seems like it. I've only been in Portland 22 years, so it couldn't be that. But I did interview you, not for your first book, which I didn't even know you then, but for your first, well, detective novel, I guess we could call it. It's a parody of Nancy Drew and other teen detectives.
That was my first shot at fiction, which is not the title of the book. The title of the book is Confessions of a Teen Sleuth.
Yes. And having read a couple of those, I read The Hardy Boys, I read Nancy Drew, Cherry Adams, I even might have read, is that her name?
Cherry Ames.
Ames, yeah.
I might even have read nurse. One of those.
Exactly, yeah. It was spot on, and I thought that was a lot of fun. The series of books that we're going to talk about today, of which the latest... Oh, let me do this. Title of your latest novel is Let Me Go, Chelsea Kane, last name spelled C-A-I-N, and it's published by Minotaur. That looks like a Minotaur. Features Gretchen Lowell. Gretchen Lowell has an odd hobby, let's put it that way. Tell us a little about Gretchen Lowell. Where does she come from? What started her in her path? Do we know that?
We don't know that. I know that. And it's sort of meted out over the course of the books, but probably Kill You Twice, which was the last book, had the most information about her background. But we don't have a whole we don't have her whole history. My idea with Gretchen is that the less we know about her, the scary she is.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is whenever they catch a serial, well, not whenever, but frequently when they catch a serial killer, mm-hmm. all of his neighbors will say, he was such a nice man and so quiet.
Right, and, yeah. right. nobody ever says, like, you know, I knew he was a psychopath.
Exactly right, yeah. and usually they are men. There have been very few, as far as I know, very few female serial
it's
killers.
It's because the men get caught, Ed. white guy. I mean, why is that the profile? The schlubby white guy, because they're the people who get caught.
Ted, what's his face?
Ted Bundy.
Yeah, nothing schlubby about him.
No, he was handsome, but he also got away with it for a long time.
For a long time, mm-hmm. yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about this book. You have a DC cop, a Portland police detective named, I don't know where that popped out of.
What book are you reading?
you know, it's funny. I might have just read a George Pelicanos book. Maybe that's what it is. His name is Archie Sheridan. Yeah. He is a detective in the Portland Police Bureau. And he has, I guess you'd call it a relationship with Gretchen Lowell. Can you describe what their relationship is like?
Well, they have a history together. I don't know how much to give away in terms of people who haven't read any of the books, but I'll give away some.
Okay. So
Archie had an affair with Gretchen before he knew that she was this serial killer he actually was leading a task force to hunt for, which wasn't a great move. And all of the books really are kind of a morality tale about how you shouldn't cheat on your wife because he had this affair with Gretchen. And then it turned out that she was quite murderous in addition to being charismatic and beautiful. And she tortured him for 10 days and then let him go and turned herself in. And that kind of kicks off the arc of their relationship. So each of the books explores the present day of Archie grappling with this mistake that he made and his obsession with her. He's sexually obsessed with her and can't let it go, even though he tries very hard and even though it costs him a lot. So the books explore that and then reveal in flashback some new aspect of their relationship that helps explain maybe the root of this obsession.
Yeah, his friends, the ones who care about him, actually know not even to mention it if they can, because it's something about him that they can't figure out and they can't change. So the ones that like him, the ones that work with him, which is his partner, Henry, mm-hmm. You know, he tries not even to talk about it, except every now and then something slips out.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, it's a metaphor for smoking. It's your friend's bad habit.
You know, very, very few times in my life have I been caught nonplussed, but that certainly did it to
nice
me.
Nice use of nonplussed.
Yeah. Okay. A metaphor for smoking. Well, I gave up smoking more than 30 years ago, and I haven't killed anybody yet that I know of. So
you're a better man than Archie.
Yeah. Okay. Did he give up smoking?
Try yeah, he doesn't smoke.
He doesn't smoke because, okay, because...
Susan smokes.
That's it. Yeah. And that is Susan Ward. Susan Ward is a former reporter for a Portland Daily who has been caught
up... The Oregon Herald.
Yes. Who has been caught up in this because she was working on Gretchen Lowell and ran into Archie and got involved with Archie emotionally, if at least not physically, mm-hmm. and is always a presence. She's like a satellite running around the relationship
That's
between
a good
Archie
way to
and
describe
Grohl.
Her.
Yes?
Yeah. I mean, Susan operates as kind of the reader. She's there to kind of help us experience this world.
Dr. Watson.
Yeah, because she hasn't, I've never been a serial killer or a cop, and I can't bring a whole lot of authority to that. I can do what I can, but I have done what Susan did, at least before she was fired from the Herald. And I knew kind of how that worked, and I felt like I could describe that with enough authority that maybe readers would buy it and be willing to kind of go along on the rest. And Susan experiences the stuff that we haven't seen. So she's able to sort of experience it and explain it and be new to it.
Mm-hmm. Her relationship with Archie Sheridan goes up and down depending on the book. And one of the few refuges she has is her mom. Mother's named Bliss, mm-hmm. aptly named Bliss. And I have a feeling that Bliss is based on something from your young life. Is this true?
She's based on you, Ed.
She is? No, fabulous. She's much better looking than I am.
Bliss is... She's 10% my mother. Or maybe my better way to say that is Bliss is like my mother times 10.
Yeah. Well, you see, I wasn't specifically referring to your mom.
Yeah.
But yeah, you had your early youth was unusual.
Yeah. And I spent my early childhood on a hippie commune and just grew up with a group very alternatively.
Yeah.
And so the kind of accoutrement of Susan's life with her mother is the same. Mm-hmm. That's very familiar to me. Bliss can be a little daffier, I guess, more extreme than my mother. My mother was more, I think, politically thoughtful, maybe. Bliss is a reaction. You know, she's always reacting. But I love her. She's a great character. She's fun to write.
She's a total hippie. I mean, yeah. I grew up through that, and she is a total hippie. Yep. I knew a lot of people like her and liked most of them because how could you not like
them?
Yeah. This particular book features a mansion on an island in Lake Oswego. First of all, I didn't even know such a thing exists, but it really does
there
exist.
There's a lake in Lake Oswego. Isn't
well,
that
I knew
surprising?
That. Yeah, I knew
I lived,
that.
I lived in Portland for like 2 years before I knew that.
Okay.
I was so surprised.
Yeah, well, there's a team in called the Lakers in Los Angeles. And is there a lake in Los Angeles?
Oh, somewhere.
Somewhere, maybe.
Studio lot.
Well, they started out in Minnesota. So. Mm.
But yeah, the island in Lake
the
Oswego.
Island and the mansion thereon, it's like a Gatsby-esque mansion.
Yeah, it's really there.
It's really there. Yeah, tell us about it. How did you find this place? I knew you were going to set something there. When you find a place like that, you have to do it.
I found it like 10 years ago, and I had gone there to pick up a snowboard, which is a whole other story. But I had been sent to pick up this snowboard, and I had no idea. Yeah, I was given an address, and... I was surprised to see that it was like there was a bridge that gates opened and there was a bridge to an island with this mansion on it. And I was amazed. So I spent 4 minutes on this island 10 years ago. But it's always it just surprised me so much that you could buy an island in the Portland area. And I was really besotted by it. And definitely have been planning on killing people there for a long time. It paid off. And happily, the island was for sale a couple of years ago. So there were all of these real estate pages that I could look at of just all of these photographs and video of the island. So it was very useful for my purposes. But it was built in 1929 by the Janssen swimsuit owners.
Yeah. And you said a lot of the book there. There's a big party there.
Mm-hmm. There's a masquerade ball.
Masquerade ball, yes. And things happen. Now, I don't know how much, I'm always worried about treading too heavily on a plot.
Mm-hmm.
But
I'm fine with it if you are.
Okay, tread. Go ahead.
No, okay. Yeah. You want me just to talk about party?
Yeah, sure.
Well, okay, Archie and Susan both end up at this masquerade party. It's Halloween weekend in the book. And it is on this island. And they are both there without knowing that each other is there. And that night, there is a murder. And then it turns out that Gretchen Lowell was also there. And they all collide. And it creates fallout that then ripples forward from that point.
Yeah. This whole thing, though, starts with a body on a bathroom floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Gold Dust Meridian.
Yeah, yeah. Where and when did that happen? What's going on with that?
Okay, the first death in the book is in chapter 2. And that would be the
You're slacking. It wasn't in chapter 1.
Well, it's referred to. Excuse me. I'm all excited now. It was referred to in chapter 1. But in chapter 2, a body, Archie and Henry respond to this, or Archie responds, Henry's already there. This a cop, a DEA agent, is found dead. He's been shot in the head quite gruesomely in the bathroom at the Gold Dust Meridian, a bar that I have gone to.
I was just there the other night.
Been in that bathroom.
I was just there the other night. First, I mean, I live 5 blocks from this place, and I didn't know it was there. So it shows you how far out of it I really am.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's busy. It's a hip little place.
It is. It's one of the new watering holes here in hipster heaven.
Yeah. Yeah, and I said this murder there. We actually have a friend who's one of the owners of that place, and I've been, you know, the book was almost done, and my husband read it and said, you know, don't you think you should ask? And I was like, what do you mean, ask? Like, this is a great honor to have someone murdered in your establishment. They're going to love it. And he was like, maybe you should ask. But it turned out it was fine.
Yeah. Next time I go, I have to go to the bathroom just so I can see the actual scene.
Yeah, it's small. It's hard to fit a body in there.
Here's something. Some of this book also takes place in strip joints, of which there are plenty in Portland. We do not lack for bars where women take their clothes off in this town. I suppose there's some where men take their clothes off as well. Mm-hmm. But how much personal research did you do? Did you go to some of these places?
Oh, sure. I mean, I've been to strip clubs. Uh-huh. I think the Dancing Bear is the one that's featured. And we've been there before in other books. And that, you know, you just can't beat that name.
The Dancing Bear.
The Dancing Bear.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like something out of a John Irving novel.
But I should say that many, many more dastardly things happen there in my books than in the real place.
Let's hope so.
That I know of.
Now, there's a character named Leo in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Last name Reynolds.
Reynolds. And here's a piece of advice. Never give a character a last name that ends with S.
Because?
Because it creates the terrible possessive double S.
Yeah.
Reynolds's. And in this book, I not only have Leo Reynolds, I have his whole family have appeared in the series. And so I will have pages and pages. It's just Reynolds. It was a terrible mistake.
You don't just go with the apostrophe without the additional S?
It's not my choice. I would, absolutely. That's what I prefer. Yeah. But the style guide my publisher uses demands the extra S.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, it's correct. It's just falling into desuetude, I think, is the terminology.
It's trippy.
Yeah.
Leo Reynolds. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Now Leo Reynolds has a history, not personally, but has a history with Gretchen also. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Well, Susan, her boyfriend, Leo Reynolds, is part of this family who lives on the island in Lake Oswego, and they are drug runners, and his father has gotten very rich doing this, and his sister, Isabel, when she was 14, was murdered. And Gretchen was blamed for that murder. And so that is how Archie came into that family, investigating Isabel's death many years ago. So everybody has lots of history.
Mm-hmm. Now, Leo is in a very precarious position. Do you want to talk about that?
Which precarious position?
Well, his father is the bull goose of drug running in the Pacific Northwest.
Bull goose, like that. I've never heard that before.
Come on,
I haven't.
Never read Ken Kesey.
I'm going to use that later today.
In One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Randall McMurphy is referred to as the bull goose loony.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or else he uses that phrase. In any case, he's the alpha guy. And Leo is his son.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing that might cause trouble in Leo's life if certain things come to light.
It is. Well, Leo is an informer. He's actually a DEA agent. So he, influenced by Archie in many ways as a teenager, when Archie came into their lives, as Archie was investigating his sister's murder, Leo, you know, wanted to do something good. And he was sent to sort of be in the family and be this undercover source of information because his family is so connected to various enterprises. And so that is kind of turning Leo inside out. Mm-hmm. He's pretending to be someone he's not and kind of getting lost in that.
Yeah, they tell me that when people go deep undercover, it actually changes their lives and not for the better.
Right.
Yeah. I'd like to remind our listeners that I'm speaking with Chelsea Kane. Title of her latest novel is Let Me Go, published by Minotaur. There's a couple of characters in this book that I liked a lot. One was Star.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm glad you like her. Oh, I like Star, too.
Yeah, I see her as a good soul in a bad position.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Star is a stripper.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she's a dancer. She's a stripper, and she also is a little bit prostitute-y. She's a party girl for money.
There you
however
go.
You want to put it.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
she's a survivor.
Even better, because you do what you can to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she gives Archie his first lap dance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really cute.
It's a sweet scene, right?
It really is, yes. And I think he needs it.
Everyone remembers that. Yeah. Yeah, poor Archie. You know, Archie is always, speaking of just, you know, being in precarious predicaments, Archie is always resisting his more base urges. Most of the books are really about that struggle for him. And that was, I think, a good example of that.
Well, giving into them didn't exactly do much for him.
No, it's very true.
Yeah.
It's true. Poor guy.
In fact, his wife, Debbie, has moved in with another guy in, oh my God, Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, she moved to the Couve.
Yeah. Now, listeners to the All Classical Station, where people are going to hear this, that we do very well in Southwest Washington.
Uh-huh.
People love us in Southwest Washington. So I don't want to say anything bad about
Vancouver.
Not
at all.
Not at all. But it's not Portland, after all,
right.
Is it? Yeah.
Right. Although Debbie did move from Hillsborough.
Oh, okay. Well, so it's a step up then. Okay.
Yeah. And
sorry.
You know,
sorry.
She is a nice place, yeah. Which is actually based on an apartment some friends of mine had in Vancouver. And she... You know, it's just that idea of the distance, you know, how Vancouver is so close but feels so far away. So for Archie to have his family living across the bridge like that is hard for him.
Well, a river is a metaphor, isn't it?
It is. It's and a body of water.
And a body of water. Oh, I forgot about that part. I'm always dealing with metaphors and so little with bodies of water. We need to talk about Gretchen. Now,
Gretchen, I like the way you say that. We need to talk about Gretchen,
yes.
Issues.
She... In one of the last books, she was in a psychiatric hospital.
Right.
And in what for her is dire straits. Yes? Tell us about that.
Yeah, she ended up in a psych ward. Gretchen, one of my challenges is, you know, having her... I can't have her always on the loose because then at some point, Archie just seems like he's really bad at his job. So she's occasionally apprehended and put away, but then I have to get her out. But I don't want to do that every book. So to change things up a little bit, instead of putting her in prison, she's put in this Oregon mental hospital, speaking of Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
And this is sort of Archie's revenge and way to kind of exercise control over her is to just keep her really medicated. So she is really medicated. And because of that, the medication, she loses one of her great tools of power, which is her beauty. And I thought that would be interesting to explore.
She gets puffy.
Right. She's bloated.
Yeah. And I mean, she reminds me of those Thorazine casualties in the 60s.
Right.
Yeah. But she doesn't wind up there, does she?
No. Yeah. No. She's Gretchen Lowell.
Yeah, that's right.
She was, you know, I wasn't smart enough to understand this when I created that character, but she has been incredibly useful because she is such a sort of powerful character. And we believe that she can get away with so much. It allows me to kind of really take some leaps in terms of believability because we feel like Gretchen Lowell is capable of these, you know, machinations and plotting that other people wouldn't be.
Well, if you create Superman, occasionally he has to do something super.
Right.
Yeah. And that's what it is with Gretchen.
She is my Superman.
Yeah.
Gretchen Lowell is my Superman.
Yeah.
I want a t-shirt that says that.
Here's a question for you. Has she brought your game up as a person when you have to think Gretchen Lowell? Does that create in you a higher level of consciousness?
That's a really good question. Probably, in the sense that in conversation and dialogue, she's got to say the wittiest, sharpest thing, and she's got to be thinking 30 moves ahead of all the other characters. And in order for her to do that, I have to then, you know, think 30 moves ahead, or at least be able to backtrack and, you know, plant something earlier. And that is a challenge. And she's my favorite character to write of all the characters because she doesn't have a point of view. Susan and Archie and occasionally Henry are all, you know, close third point of view characters. So we get inside their heads and we never get inside Gretchen's head. We just know what she tells us, what she allows us to know, what she lies about. And that is another source of her power. But I love to write her because she's such a powerful archetype. And, you know, I think she is a witty and she is a devious. But there is something I hope that is very compelling about her at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I hate this cliche, but I'm going to use it because here it sort of works, and that is, she is what she is.
Yeah.
She's a black box.
Well, and she doesn't. Women will come up to me sometimes and say things like, you know, I find Gretchen Lowell so inspiring. Yeah, and that is my first reaction. Like, you need some therapy, young lady.
It's the power.
But,
I think.
Yeah, I mean, the more I think about it, like, Gretchen never apologizes. She never makes excuses. She never is paralyzed by indecision. And I think especially women in books, you know, the so-called just women's novels, they're all about, and on TV, like the archetype that is very popular right now are women who are just sort of, no matter how successful they are kind of racked with these sort of nervous tics and neuroses about relationships or about, you know, on and on and on. And maybe that's because, you know, most women have a lot of that stuff going on, and that's why we want to see those characters reflected. But I think it's extreme, and I think that Gretchen Lowell is such a refreshing female character for many female readers because she is none of that. I mean, she's certifiably a lot of things, but not neurotic.
And not a victim.
And not a victim at all.
Yeah.
No.
One of my favorite quotes from Napoleon is, never complain, never explain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
good advice.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question about her. Now, you said she's your favorite character to write. There are, mm-hmm, how many books has she been in now? Five?
Well, she's been in all of them, so the six. She's
yeah,
in the Night Season in a small scene.
In a small way, yeah.
I missed her terribly. I think the two books since then have been especially Gretchen-y because of that.
Uh-huh. So you haven't developed, I don't know, you're not tired of her yet or anything like that?
No.
Or any of the other characters?
No.
Okay.
I'm not, you know, but I'm starting a new series. I just turned in the first draft this morning at 2 a.m.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah. 2 a.m.
2 a.m.
Writer time.
Yep. Yeah. And that is the beginning of a new series that will be published by Simon & Schuster. And then I will alternate between the two series. Mm-hmm. And that'll be interesting.
It was series apostrophe S.
Yes. Yeah. It was a challenge. It takes place in the same universe as, you know, the Portland I write about, which is our Portland, but more serial killers. So there'll be some crossover, some of the really minor characters, because I like it when writers I read do that when they create a new series. So there's some continuity, and I think it invites everybody in. But it's got, you know, new main characters, and it was harder to write that than to write, you know, the books that in the series that I do write, because I feel like I know the characters so well, and I have so much of their histories in my head, and suddenly these were new people, and I was like, hey, how are you? Tell me about yourself.
Yeah, and we do fall in love with our characters. That's really true, because
yeah,
we've created them like our children.
Oh, so. Yeah, people ask me, like, how many books I plan to write, you know, if I have the end wrapped up, and, like, the idea of stopping, you know, writing about these characters kind of terrifies me.
Well,
because I would never
know.
Want to put them away.
There's no end to Kinsey Millhone, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah. So
that's my model when you have like 40
going,
books on the shelf.
They're going to have to start going into other alphabets, I guess. You
right.
Know, it's like Dr. Seuss and Beyond Zebra, you know. Well, let me ask you this then, because I know that some writers, after a while, get really tired of their characters and they really feel like they need to move on. So they either do standalones or start another series.
Yeah.
So do you think this new series will give you the kind of distance you need from Archie Sheridan and Gretchen Lowell et al. To refresh the well, as it were?
I don't think I need distance. If anything, I worry that it will distract me and
uh-huh.
it will be harder to kind of hold the two universes in my head. So that's more my concern, frankly. Although I do find that if I have something that is due, I become very interested in doing something else. And so I cheat on whatever book I'm working on, which can be really useful. Because then, you know, if I'm working on the two series, I can cheat on the books with the other books and then maybe write them twice as fast. I don't know.
Ah, yeah. What a wonderful mind you have. I got to talk about Halloween. Let's talk about Halloween in this book. I don't want you to give away too much, but this is Halloween weekend. The big party on the island takes place that weekend, but it's not Halloween.
Right.
What goes on Halloween that you want to tell us about to pique the interest of the reader?
Well, I will say it has something to do with the fact that I did an event at Powell's on Tuesday dressed in a blood-spattered nurse's uniform.
Which could be a costume, couldn't it?
So it was a yes. Yes. No, Gretchen Lowell eventually shows up. And since it's Halloween, and she's festive, she knows how to have a good time, she shows up in a Halloween costume. It turns out, like, being a serial killer at large, it's good to be at large over Halloween, because you can walk around and people just think, especially Gretchen Lowell, who is notorious, infamous. There are Gretchen Lowell Halloween costumes on the market. And so she's able to kind of get around, because people just think she's in costume.
Yeah, I used to have a friend who was a drag queen, and he told me that Halloween is Christmas for drag queens. Uh-huh. Yeah, Gretchen really hides in plain sight through part of this. She comes across the Canadian border and just looks right up at the camera and smiles. She wants people to know she's there. Mm-hmm. She's a show-off.
She's confident.
I was going in the spectrum of confidence, you know, where confident is like ready to meet the day every day, and an amazingly arrogant, narcissistic person. She's somewhere on that spectrum.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think that I feel defensive of her.
No, please. It's not a personal attack.
No, and she is certainly a little bit of a megalomaniac. But she also, she wants Archie to know that she's there. I mean, she looks up at the camera because she wants Archie to know that she's coming.
That's right. Yeah, that's what it is, too. Not because she performs for him, mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know if you want to talk about this. You can say no, but the new series, can you tell us anything about that?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead.
It is, the main character is a character named Kick Lanigan, and she was abducted when she was six and was rescued at 6 years later. And actually 5 years later, and she is now 21 in the books, and she has all kinds of, she sort of became an Elizabeth Smart character to the kind of cultural consciousness. Mm-hmm. and had, you know, became notorious in her own right because of her abduction. And the man who abducted her is in prison, and Kick is asked by sort of enigmatic stranger named Evans, who's, I'm going to change that name because it has the double S thing. That's why this is on my mind. And he involves her in this case of of another abducted child, and she kind of gets pulled back into this world that she knew and becomes a sort of fighter for good.
Kick Lanigan, it's a great name. It's like a name that Carol Lombard would have in a 1930s
isn't
comedy.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. And it's...
Did it pop into your head? That's where most of these names come from.
No. Lanigan is the name of my daughter's second grade teacher. And Kick, it's short for Kathleen.
Ah.
And that was Kathleen Kennedy, who was a sister who of JFK's, who died in a plane crash in the 40s. They called her Kick. That was her name. And I always loved that. I always loved the name Kick. And so I just sort of, you know, I've had it in my pocket all these years.
Mm-hmm. You know, everything that comes out of your head interests me. I have yet to read your memoir of growing up on the commune, but I'm going to find that one day and I'm going to take a look at it. Not that I expect any insights into you, obviously, but
You'll find a few.
You think?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You might enjoy that too with your, you know, because I think it'll seem familiar, a lot of the people.
Boy, I could change it off here, but this is not my interview. This is your interview. Mm-hmm. So we'll do it over a drink one day.
Okay.
It's always good to talk to you. It's always good to see you.
Likewise.
I've been speaking with Chelsea Cain. Her last name is spelled C-A-I-N. Her latest book is Let Me Go, published by Minotaur. And you occasionally will read her in the New York Times Book Review, too. Lucky you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you do a good job.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's a very stressful gig.
Is it really?
Well, sure. It's the New York, you know,
They print your stuff.
Yeah, I know, but I get nervous just because it means a lot to me.
You should write
it's one of the few things I take seriously, is what I'm saying.
All right, so you should write them as Gretchen Lowell.
Oh, she would tear those books to shreds.
They already have Michiko Kakutani, and, you know, she's known more for her knife work than for her reviews,
very
at least
true.
To me. So, okay. Yeah, I don't want to get you in trouble. See you again, Chelsea.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Author, produced at the studios of All Classical KQAC-FM in Portland. My name is Ed Goldberg. You can find these programs at our website, allclassical.org/author. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back soon.